We've been looking at the five hindrances, the five nivarana, obstacles or shrouds or coverings. And so far we've looked at sensual desire, ill will, and dullness and drowsiness. And for the next one is Uddhacha Kukkucha, which we usually translate as restlessness and remorse. So the basic idea of these two, and why they're actually two different things, but why they're in the same thing, is because they're essentially about time. Uddhacha wants to run off to the future, Kukkucha wants to drag up the past. And when we're meditating, then these become often quite subtle obstacle to our continued practice. Sometimes not so subtle, but often restlessness and concern about the past, these are things that can sometimes come up more when we're a bit further into the retreat and our mind's starting to get a bit more peaceful. And often what you might find with especially Kukkucha is that your mind becomes clear, and as your mind becomes clear, it starts to surface memories from the past, and particularly like painful memories or memories of some kind of emotional turmoil or something that's been left undone or something that you feel wasn't quite right. And these are the things which often in our lives we sort of go about our lives without worrying about them too much, and we think it's not too much of a big deal and we don't really notice it a lot. But then when we come to meditate, the mind becomes much more subtle, and these things sort of drift up to the surface. And you can realize it might be something from the time just before you came to the monastery, or even during before you came to the retreat, or even during the retreat. But it could be something from a long time ago. It could be something from childhood, maybe even from past lives, who knows. But these things will appear in your mind, and they have some kind of emotional impact. And things from the past are sometimes difficult to deal with because, well, it's past. So what can you do about it? Not a lot. Unless you're the doctor, you can get in your TARDIS and fly back there and fix it. But somehow in those stories about time travel, that always seems to make it worse. So rather than going back in time to fix it, we need to learn to let go of it in the present. And similarly with restlessness, the Uddhacha, you know, you can feel restlessness in your body, right? It has this kind of energy to it. But if you look closely at it, it's usually concerned with some kind of orientation to the future. So restlessness might be, specifically, it might be things like, you know, you might have some plans or something that you want to do when you go back home or something like that. So you're thinking about that. But even more subtle forms of restlessness often have more of a spiritual side, as does Kukkucha as well. It often comes when you're sort of midway through a retreat, like we are now, and then you're starting to think, oh, hang on, I've only got this many days of my retreat left. I better get going. And this kind of feeling that we can somehow make things go faster. I don't know if anybody here is familiar with Arj Barker's The Sickest Buddhist. No? No, there's a rap on YouTube, The Sickest Buddhist. I don't know how, why I'm just so zen. I make the power of now look like the power of then. And one of his things there was like they had a 20-minute meditation. I nailed it in 10. So, not 100% sure that's how meditation works. There's a beautiful story that Ajahn Brahm tells about that he was told on his first retreat that he did when he was in Cambridge. The teacher there was a Vietnamese fellow, and he told the story when he was growing up. His mum taught him how to grow some plants and just gave him some seedlings to grow in the backyard. And he was so happy to have his first plants that he could grow. And so his mum taught him how to prepare the ground and how to put the seeds in there and how to water the soil and so on. And then after a few days, he was so incredibly happy to see the shoots coming out of the soil. He's like, wow, I'm so proud he's managed to grow these things. He's only a kid. He doesn't understand. He's like, wow, soon I'll have a plant. I'll have flowers or whatever he was growing. Next day he goes out. It's only a tiny bit bigger. I'll water it some more. Okay. The third day, still only a tiny bit bigger. It's going far too slowly. What's going on? He says, I know what I'll do. I'll just help them along a little bit. I'll just pull them a little bit higher. Just like... So that was the end of that. So this is what we do. It's a very, very good simile for meditation. And your meditation is going okay. You've already, and I keep on trying to say this to reflect on that. You've already given up a lot to come here. You've already got that wholesome intention to practice. You're already coming here and meditating. And as long as you keep that up, keep up the program, meditating every day, keeping the mind quiet, keeping restrained and keeping precepts, then things are going along okay. We have been, I think, given unrealistic expectations sometimes by this kind of idea of like intensive retreats. The whole idea of an intensive retreat is weird. Why should retreats be intensive? And this kind of whole idea you should just do nothing but meditate all day, every day. I'm like, actually, if you read the suttas, it's not like that. The Buddha never says, you know, only meditate and never do anything else. Obviously, he's encouraging people to meditate every day and to meditate a lot, but people had full lives and they did things in their lives, and that was how it is. And if you have a chance to practice more, in a more focused way on retreat, then great. But don't imagine that this is a kind of a substitute for genuine kind of spiritual growth. And sometimes I feel that people see, you read kind of, these days we have so much kind of stories and, you know, people can post things on the internet and all of these kinds of things. And for spiritual things, you really just lose a lot of context. And a lot of people, you know, because I see one of the things we do as part of Sutta Central is we host a forum. And you see a lot of people posting a lot of very silly things on the forum. And people who obviously don't have any real kind of spiritual development or wisdom. And yet they're sort of positing themselves as authorities about things. And you're like, well, it's not quite like that. It's not that simple. And so it's easy to, we have this kind of random access universe where you can just sort of pluck things out of different places and you just sort of try to make sense of it. When we present things and when we are trying to teach the Dhamma, if you're teaching the Dhamma with the mentorship of a teacher in a proper context, then things will be taught and put into a place that will make sense for you. But we've sort of discarded that environment and that context, and we just sort of throw everybody in at the deep end and expect everybody to make sense of it. And you know, when I've come here and I'm teaching retreats, you know, I'm not talking about, you know, jhanas and high states of samadhi and enlightenment and stuff all the time. Why not? Well, because most of you are not there yet, right? This is like, and this is what I learned from the forest tradition. You know, when I stayed with even some of the great meditation masters in the forest tradition, and one of the monks was like asking this monk about these, you know, high states of, you know, attainments and things like that. And the monk just laughed and said, you know, you can't even keep your mind peaceful for a few minutes and you're asking about all these attainments. One of the moments that struck me as when I was when I first arrived at Bodhinyana Monastery to stay with Ajahn Brahm, because he was one of the first teachers who really sort of began talking about jhanas in detail. One time they were doing some work on the hut that I was staying in, and they were doing some brickwork there. And I went to see the work, and there was Ajahn Brahm and three or four junior monks were there doing this bricklaying. And what was really obvious was, we get there, was that all of the monks were there talking about jhanas and all of these things, except for Ajahn Brahm, and he was laying bricks. And, okay, that's how it works, right? And there's a time for laying bricks, and there's a time for talking about high dhammas and things like that, and there's a time for doing the practice. But the practice, we don't get there by going faster. So, I'll tell you a story that I thought, a little parable for this that I thought of one time, and this parable was inspired by one time when I was flying into France a few years ago, and I read a story on the in-flight magazine, and it reminded me of being that approach to meditation. And so to kind of retell the story, was the story about a young girl who went to her parents one day and told them that she wanted to be an astronaut. And her parents didn't say to her, "Don't be silly, right? You can't do that." They said, "Okay, you want to be an astronaut? That's great. This is what you have to do." And they told her all the things. You have to study really hard. You have to make sure you do your homework. You have to focus on doing, you know, physics and maths and all of those kinds of things. But you also have to do sports. You have to do training. You have to be good at athletics, and you have to do this and that. And it was kind of intimidating. But she said, "Okay, if that's what it takes, that's what I'm going to do." And that's what she did. And she worked really hard at doing all of these things. And then when she grew up, she graduated, joined the Air Force, learned how to be a pilot, applied for the astronaut training scheme, kept on working really hard, got refused, applied again, got refused again, applied again. Eventually she got in. Finally, after all those years of training, she was in a rocket ship, strapped into the seat, ready to fly up into space. And then when she's ready to fly up into space, they have a big red button in rocket ships. I don't know if you know this. They have a big red button, and you press it and it makes it go. Yeah? And so she pressed the big red button and she made it go. She went up into space, and later on, after she'd become an experienced astronaut with many trips into space, she wrote her memoirs and she told her story. Later on, there was a man who was catching a plane, wandered into the bookshop in the airport, happened to come across her memoir, picked it up and started leafing through the memoir, and came to the bit where she was pressed the big red button and went into space. And then he thought, "Huh, that doesn't sound too hard. Maybe I'll be an astronaut." I mean, you just sit down in the seat, put the seatbelt on, and press the big red button. I mean, there's not too much to it, right? I mean, what's the big deal? And funny story, I thought of this parable, and the first time I told that story, I was in France at a retreat there, and the talk was being translated by the daughter of the family that I was staying with at the time. And she was, in her 20s, and I'd hardly even met her. She was just doing this translation into French. And when she was a very good translator. When we were doing the talks, then she would translate everything very fluently and very nicely. But when I was telling this story, she kept on kind of stumbling and hesitating during the story. And I didn't really know why. And afterwards, her father came up to me and said, that was the story of my daughter's life. That was exactly what her life was. She just wanted to be a pilot her whole life. And what you said in that story, everything about it was exactly what we did in our life. That's weird, right? So anyway. So this is what sometimes it's like. Yeah? So we have to, as meditation teachers, we have to try to strike a balance. On the one hand, we want to encourage people to practice. We don't want to make things sound too easy. On the other hand, we don't want to pretend that these things are just sort of trivial. They're not trivial. And there's a reason why the Buddha and all of the great sages would leave home and go off into the forest. There's a reason why they would give up everything. There's a reason why they would go into the mountains in the Himalayas or the jungles or the hills and practice in caves or under trees for many, many years to realize these states. It's because they're not easy. And if you imagine that you're going to do a week-long retreat and get into the same state that the great sages were doing by giving up everything in their lives and going and practicing for decades at a time in the mountains, then your ambition is praiseworthy, I guess. But perhaps reality also should be considered as part of the equation there. And you can't just wish these things to be into place just because you think they should be. That's not to say that nobody can realize these things, because everybody has different faculties. And we talked about the indriyas and spiritual potential earlier. People do have very different spiritual potential. And that's just part of nature. And we talked earlier about how, some people can even get into jhanas or, jhana-like states just perfectly naturally without even meditating. So it's not that I think these things are impossible, it's just that I think that you just should be realistic about our expectations. So as meditation teachers, I think if we paint an unfavorably positive interpretation, then or we run the risk of creating the conditions for disappointment in the future. I've had some truly bizarre conversations with people who are meditators. One meditator that I know who is firmly convinced that they have jhanas and that they can get into jhanas whenever they want. And I've kind of tried to, when someone is like that, I don't say to them, no, that isn't jhana, but it isn't. And, one time he's saying, actually, I'd really like to be a monk, but the big reason why I don't become a monk is that I think it would be just boring to sit in jhanas all day. As far as most of the monks that I know, that's not their biggest problem. You're not going to get bored. That's kind of the whole thing. Getting bored is also a symptom of restlessness, actually. You want to be somewhere other than you are. So on the one hand, we don't want to make these things seem unrealistically easy or simplistic. On the other hand, we want to encourage people. And so I think it's important to encourage people by pointing to the real and observable benefits of practice that you can see right when you start meditating. And this is why we're always reviewing our practice and looking back on it. And you see, well, actually, even that little bit of peace that you can realize is still peace. It's still beautiful. It's something really worthwhile. Even that little bit of clarity you get, even that little bit of mindfulness is still something worthwhile. It's not like you get no benefits at all. It's just a slog until you get to jhanas, right? That's not how it is. You have to be happy where you are. And it's being happy where you are that is what brings you to jhanas. Not striving hard to get somewhere that you're not. So if you can't be content and happy where you are, you're never going to get into jhanas. So don't worry about these things. Don't worry too much about trying to get somewhere. Don't worry if you don't see any progress in your practice. There's a Pali word for this. It's called niramisa domanasa, a spiritual unhappiness or spiritual sadness. And this is the Buddha said is the longing when you wish, oh, when will I realize those peaceful liberations that the noble ones know? And so when you're sitting there and you're thinking, oh, I feel so stressed and so much anxiety and so much all of these things, and then you look around the room and everybody else is so peaceful. Everybody else is thinking the same thing, of course. Don't worry about it. It's okay. Yeah? It's okay. So the path is there and we practice the path. How long it takes, we don't know. The Buddha used a simile like the simile of a ship's rigging that just rots away in the weather. You can't tell from one day to the next. You can't tell whether it's the same or it's different, but over the years the water gets into it, it swells up, the sun dries it out in the daytime, and eventually the fetters tying the ship up will collapse and rot away. So this is what's happening inside you, whether you realize it or not, whether you notice or not. Every time that you meditate, every time that you practice, you're weakening those fetters, you're weakening those things that are binding you to suffering. And you're becoming a little bit closer to freedom. So the path is winding and uncertain. But that doesn't mean it's not a path. It just means you keep going, that's all. So to overcome both restlessness and remorse, we remain in the present. And one of the big insights and one of the big trainings that we have to undergo in meditation is the realization that the present is where we are at. And the idea, we have this idea that somehow these memories keep coming into our minds. But memories don't come into your minds. Memories are dead. Memories don't have any energy. What's happening is that your mind in the present is going back into the past and digging up those memories. Yeah? So we think of memories like zombies, like they've risen up out of their grave and they're shambling towards us, wanting to eat our brains. And we have these hordes of zombies clambering after us and we can't escape from them. But that's not correct at all. That's not what's happening. What's happening is that you are going out into the graveyard in the middle of the night with a shovel, and you are digging up the graves, and you dig up the graves, and you pull out the skeletons, and you pick up the bones, and you start bashing yourself over the head with the bones of the past. And you're like, oh, the past is coming for me. Oh, the dead are rising. Oh. And the dead are like, come on, man, just leave me be. They just want to stay in the past. Yeah, they're just there. You're the one who brings them to life. So this is what we are doing in the present. And it's strange, isn't it? It's strange that in meditation we have this perception that it's hard to be in the present and that we have to make ourselves stay in the present. And a lot of people put a lot of effort into making their mind stay in the present. But the present is simply where you were all along. And it's only because our mind is deluded that we slip into going into the past and the future. I mean, obviously not always, right? Obviously you can go into the past and the future by using your memory or your planning or whatever in a conscious way. And that's fine. That's like just part of That's a capacity the mind has, an ability that the mind has if you use it consciously. But in meditation, we don't want to do that. We want to be in the present, and yet we can't stop doing it. And this is where it's not being done consciously, it's being done compulsively. But that compulsion arises in the present. And it's because we're not content with the present that we force our mind in the past and the future. And that takes a lot of energy. It's actually very complex. To dredge up memories of the past is a complex and stressful mental exercise. To imagine things in the future is a complex and stressful mental enterprise. We can just not do that. And if you just stop doing that, you're in the present automatically. How do you stop doing that? By looking underneath it and saying, why is it that I want to do these things? And you say, oh, okay, this is where it's coming from. And it's coming from some kind of stress or tension in the present. So, we practice contentment. Be happy. Be present. Don't go pushing into the past and the future. Just be content with whatever's here. And the curious thing is that when we give ourselves permission to just be present, we find that a lot of those worries and concerns that we had about the past and the future just solve themselves. And the plans that we have after our retreat, our thoughts about what we're going to do and these kinds of things, it becomes obvious what we should do. And the decisions we need to make and all of those kinds of things, they get made in our subconscious while we're meditating. We don't have to think about them. And your mind becomes clear. The more time you spend in the present, then the more clear you are about what's going to happen in the past and the future. So this is why we put so much emphasis on contentment and on happiness, to keep your mind in the present. The great Buddhist philosopher David Kalpahana spoke about this, and he pointed out the difference in the way that the present is treated in the suttas as opposed to the later traditions. And the later traditions have this idea of momentariness, called the kanikavada. And the idea that time is a stream of moments that are infinitesimally small. And that idea we don't find in the suttas at all. And interestingly, we don't find in the suttas the Buddha talking about the present moment. It's interesting, isn't it? The idea, the phrase the present moment first occurs in the later literature. The Buddha talked about the present. So he's sort of being present. And being present is a bit different from being in the present moment. I mean, it's not like completely different, right? I'm not saying it's like a completely different thing, but it's a slightly different feel to it. And David Kalpahana used the memorable simile. He said that the being in the present moment is like walking on a tightrope, whereas being in the present is like riding on a camel. This is a beautiful simile, yeah? And one you're not going to forget easily. So if we're in the present, if in the present moment, like walking on a tightrope, it's a lot of hard work. You have to be really skilled and all that balance constantly. Whereas if you're in the present, riding on a camel, you can relax a bit, right? It's a bit wobbly, a bit kind of shifty, there's a bit of space, right? You can sit back and enjoy the ride a little bit more. So the present, don't think of being in the present as something that's hard to do. Think of the present, being in the present as being your natural state. That's just the state of rest. So when your mind feels like it's okay to not wander around the place, it feels it's okay to just be present, then just let it naturally return to that and naturally enjoy being in that flow of the present. Okay, that's probably enough for today.